The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, good morning.
Rick, I thought today, as we've as we near the end of the year, it seems like there's a lot of questions, issues that come up, as at least as I'm going through doing year-end tax planning. It kind of dawned on me that that there's to us who do this every day, setting up a new business and deciding on the entity type and how best to structure things, it kind of becomes second nature after a while, and then we kind of forget that a lot of our clients and listeners are, just if they start up a new business, there'd be a ton of questions that came up, and they wouldn't have probably wouldn't have good answers to many of those. So I thought it would be good to have a show where we just talk about when you come up with a good idea and you think, boy, I want to set up a business, what are all the considerations that should go into that, and what sort of an entity should you ultimately end up with? There's obviously that varies depending on many things. So today I think we're going to talk about that and in some detail. But before we get to that, let's talk about the news. I know you've been looking at some interesting things this morning, so why don't you jump in and talk about things that generally get missed by a lot of the mainstream media but still are real important to us and to our clients.
Right. We try to focus on news tidbits that specifically affect us from the financial and wealth perspective. One of the issues hanging out there with the present debate about the fiscal cliff and whether we're going to raise rates and where we're going to have revenue to fund the government's activities come from, one of the issues on the discussion table are 401ks and retirement plans and the rules the government govern them and how they're taxed and what is allowed in terms of investments and deductions. And that is on the table, which is causing some consternation among some observers, fearing that it will penalize savers and people who want to support themselves. So that's one to kind of watch. Really an interesting one, probably one of the most famous, well-known business gurus in the U.S., Warren Buffett, also one of the richest men in the world, is calling for a 30% minimum tax on the quote-unquote rich. And his observation has it's an interesting one. On the one hand, he says that as a guy who sells and deals in securities, when the U.S. tax rates were at their very highest in the pre-Reagan years, his business thrived and people made a lot of money, and they would make investment choices on the basis of whether something was a good investment or not, without regard to what the tax consequences are. Of course, the economics of the Reagan tax cuts and even the Bush tax cuts have been hard to argue with. But some interesting tidbits, if the government seized all of Mr. Buffett's money, took every penny of it, it would fund the federal government for about 4.5 days. Taking everything he owns wouldn't do all that much good. This 30% minimum tax on the rich would raise about $3.2 billion a year, which if the government never borrowed another penny, it would take 514 years for that to pay off the current existing debt. So it kind of puts it in perspective. And then I guess to top it off on so-called Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, the federal government flexed its muscles and showed us its strength by putting its spending on the credit card and borrowed $24.3 billion, which amounts to $211.65 per household on the credit card of the federal government to pay for all those things that it's racist if we suggest that these government giveaways are used to buy votes. But whatever they are, the government's giving away stuff, quote unquote, and it's doing so by borrowing money. So we can all contemplate on how wise that is as a financial strategy. You know, to segue back into the business thing, because I set up businesses for a living, that's the easy thing for me to do. And my wife, in fact, sometimes has observed that if I have an idea, I'll run out and set up a business entity, and I have a collection of business entities that I have to do tax returns for that don't make any money, and it's kind of silly. And then a good friend that I've discussed some business ideas with, my impulse is to run out and create an entity, and he reminds me that's the easy part. The hard part is figuring out what the business is going to be and how it's going to make money and whether it can deliver value and whether people will pay you to do whatever you're thinking on doing. At the same time, what are the barriers that people face? So they've got a great idea. They've done the hard part of figuring out the good business model, and now they're dealing with, well, how do I structure it? Is it going to be a sole proprietorship, a partnership, a joint venture, a C corporation, an S corporation, an LLC, a business trust, or something else? And what's best? And what are the tax consequences? And what are the liabilities? And what's most flexible? And what gets me into trouble? What gives me the most protection? What's the easiest to set up? What's the easiest to maintain? What is it going to cost to set these up? What's the easiest one to get out of? Which one can be best integrated into my other planning? And what are some of the traps to avoid? And can I do all this myself, or do I have to go pay Rick and Rich a whole lot of money to figure this out? So we're going to talk about that today, Rich. What do you say when somebody says, what should I do for my business? What's your first answer?
Well, my first question is, well, tell me about your business. Because as you and I both know, unless we kind of know something about it, what they're trying to do, then you can't really advise them very well on choice of entity. Because just as an example, you and I both ran into this in this past week, because we do a lot of work with farmers and ranchers, and in that business, for certain payments that that are important, that help them in their farming operations from a government standpoint, we recommend that they set up a general partnership. Well, that's not likely a structure that we would recommend to too many people, Rick. So, but given their situation and how those things work, that makes a lot of sense. So, so I think obviously we have to be able to advise people on this. We have to say, well, you know, what are you going to do, and what's the business, and how does it work, and are you going to have losses, do you think, in the first few years, or are you going to be immediately profitable? Is it going to be a service business? Are you going to be selling things? I mean, all those sorts of questions are important. And once we get an understanding of those things, then I think then we can sit down and kind of hone in on what might make the most sense for a particular business. So today, since we don't have a particular business, it'd probably be a good idea for us to go through and talk about the various entity structures, choices that we have in a little bit of detail, and then possibly those who are listening after going through that would be able to, you know, hone in on at least a couple of entity structure choices that would make sense. So, Rick, what's the first one that comes to mind for you that we ought to talk about?
Well, I want to lay some background. It's important for our listeners to understand that business entities are government-sanctioned deals. Corporations and limited partnerships and all these entities that we've mentioned are all created under the regulatory authority of the government. And in particular, they are authorized or implemented on a state level. So while there may be city tax licenses and all kinds of things on a very local level, and while there may be federal tax ID numbers and excuse me, and things we do from the federal level, the business entities themselves are created, set up, established, regulated, monitored, and dealt with on a local level. And I liked your answer that we have to know something about the business, because ultimately what is best, the answer is it depends. So probably the oldest and the most well-known and still probably the largest in number in terms of businesses that are out there is the traditional C corp. The C corp, and there's then the S corp. The C and S comes from actually IRS codes, but a C corporation is a traditional corporation. Corporations are an interesting animal. Their owners are called shareholders. So you have shares in a corporation. The shareholders elect directors, and there's a board of directors and a chairman of the board. Then those directors of a corporation elect or appoint officers. So the board appoints the president and the vice presidents and the secretary and treasurer and all those officers. And then, of course, the officers run the corporation and hire employees and staff all the positions. So that kind of ownership and control is a significant thing to be aware of with an S corporation or any corporation. S corporations are, again, chartered on a state level. There's generally filing and publication requirements, and it varies from state to state. Virtually all business entities have to have what's called a registered agent, or in some instances a statutory agent, a natural person that is identified in official records of the company and in the public records to receive official communications for tax notices and violations of the law, a person who would get served with process if there was a lawsuit. So corporations will have be formed with articles of incorporation that will be filed with the state that will designate a statutory agent. Some interesting things with corporations, with C corporations, and this is true of S corporations as well. In most instances, corporations are required by law to file annual reports with the state. And sometimes in some states, those annual reports are very nominal, very minimal. In other places, they're quite extensive and will basically be like a tax return. So corporations are required to file those. There's usually an annual fee. Failure to make that annual report and pay that annual fee can result in administrative termination of the corporation. Most states also require corporations to have annual meetings and to record those meetings with minutes. And an interesting little nuance with C corporations is that stock in a corporation is personal property, and it can be taken away from you. So one of the questions we want to ask in selecting a business entity, especially when the client says, well, why do I want an entity to protect me? Well, what are we trying to protect? What are we trying to protect from, and who are we trying to protect it for? And while a corporation can be, if properly maintained, highly effective at containing liability, so the liabilities of a business operation can be contained within the corporation and not get out if we've done it right, a corporation can be a terrible way to exclude liability. Because if I own my corporation 100% and I get sued and there's a judgment rendered against me, that judgment creditor can levy upon and garnish and take away from me my shares of stock in that corporation. And then they own the corporation, not me, so they can reach into the corporation and take all of its assets. So that's a factor we look at in establishing a corporation. C corporations, Rich, you can talk to us for a minute about how they're taxed. Generally, they have double taxes. C corporations are a tax-paying entity, so they have to pay their own taxes, and then they may or may not declare dividends, which can be taxed again to the shareholders, and then other forms of compensation come out of a corporation as wages. Elaborate on that a little for us, Rich.
Well, excuse me. Yeah, the interesting thing about a C corp and all the things that you've been talking about here, if you set up as a corporation and issue stock, you have the issue that you talked about with the with it being personal property. There's another way to be taxed as a C corp, which is what I'm talking about, and but you can set up as an LLC, and then you can simply make an election to be taxed as a C corp. So you end up with the same tax outcome. But you don't have the issue of someone being able to take your stock because it's personal property, because units in an LLC are not considered to be personal property.
Well, so, you're taking my punchline. I was going to wait and talk about that later when we talked about LLCs, but you're right that C-Corp tax status can be allocated to other kinds of entities. Because C-Corps are taxed, don't they have some deductions that are then available to them, and maybe some retirement planning options that may not be available in other kinds of entities?
Yeah, yes, there are. The and often in the plan, the advising that we do, Rick, we look at that, and we somewhere in the structure we usually try to have a C corp because there are benefits that you can provide to employees that either are not available to or very difficult to provide in another structure. So one of those, for example, would be a Section 79 plan. There are also some health benefit plans, health reimbursement plans, which have been formalized by certain groups, and those are only available in the C corp world when you're being taxed as a C corp. So, I should point out here too, Rick, that a lot of the issues that surround the C corp involve what you mentioned earlier, where you have the double taxation issue. We've got, compared to the world in general, we have extremely high corporate tax rates in the U.S. That seems to be something getting a lot of attention, and I really expect as we go over the fiscal cliff or go through whatever we're going to go through here in the next few months, I expect one of the things that will come out of that is that the Congress will make the U.S. more competitive by lowering those corporate tax rates, which then may change the recommendations that we make at times, Rick, because if we're on a competitive level and we've got a 15% corporate tax rate at the highest or 20, then and the individual rates go to where those appear to be going in the near 40 range, it may make sense in a lot of situations to set up as a C corp, or at least be taxed as a C corp, I should say. So there's a lot of moving pieces, and you know, even in this most basic of discussions about the type of entity, we can't really make good decisions today because of Congress and the president being unable to do their job.
Let's talk more about the C Corp after we come back from our break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Doctors Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Okay, good to be back after break. We want to remind our listeners that you can call us at 480-324-8000 or email us at info@whataboutwealth.com with your questions and comments. One of the best things we get to do is talk to our listeners and communicate with them about these ideas. Kind of to wrap up on the C Corp, often there can be some tax benefits, specifically some ability to deduct certain expenses or provide certain benefits to employees and that make a C corporation attractive, but the maintenance cost of the traditional C corporation and its vulnerability to third-party liabilities for the owners make it kind of an issue. We see the traditional C corp most often used when companies are intending to go public. The stock exchange companies that you see out there are the classic C corp. And so if part of your business model is someday you're going to go public, then the C corporation is probably going to be the way you want to go. And then as we will see later on, sometimes we get other structures that we can adopt and elect to have the C corporation status. Now, something that's for people to be able to identify, how do I know if somebody has a C corp? Companies that have Inc. or Incorporated or Corp. or Limited or company or co-CO, all of those designations are usually indicate a corporation. And one of the rules, by the way, if you're going to operate as a business entity, you have to hold yourself out to the public in that capacity. You cannot be a secret corporation. You have to put it out there and say, we are XYZ Inc. or whatever it is. So with the double taxation of the C Corp, that has led to the second type of corporation, which is called an S Corp. And these have been tremendously popular, especially in the service industry, even in professional practices. Dentists and medical professions often like the S Corp. An S Corporation is a corporation in all of its structural details. So it too has shareholders and directors and officers, and has the same sort of governance in terms of the need for annual filings and annual reports and tax returns and the same requirement for minutes and the same maintenance as a C corp. But the S corporation differs in one significant material respect, in that instead of paying taxes at the corporate level, S corporations are a flow through entity, that the business income and losses do not get taxed at the corporate level, but flow through to the shareholders. Now, one of the interesting effects of this with the S corporation is that the rules are very strict on a couple of levels. One is that with S corporations, the gains or losses, the income or losses of the corporation must flow through to the shareholders pro rata based upon the number of shares they own. So if it's 50-50 or 70-30 or 80-20, that's how the losses and gains are going to flow out. Another interesting thing is that S corporations are restricted as to who or what can be a shareholder. Obviously, natural persons can be a shareholder. And then, you know, the general principle, the way to think about it, is the effective equivalent of a natural person. So, for example, a partnership cannot be a shareholder in a corporation that has made an S election. And that's a lesson, Rich, I learned the hard way as a young lawyer nearly 25 years ago. I inadvertently terminated an S election for a client, and it cost me a great deal of money to get that inadvertent termination reinstated. So,
well, I saw one just this week, Rick. I was looking at a new client's information and found that he was a participant in an S corp through an LLC that he owned. So the LLC was a shareholder in the S corp. So they're on their way to termination, I guess.
Ooh, I guess and this is a new thing. S corporations can own other S corporations.
Yeah. Well, so it wasn't that.
Wasn't that way. Ouch.
Yeah. And one other thing, Rick, that really, as we talk about the C corp and the S corp and people starting up businesses, is that and I find this even today, which is shocking to me, but you never, so this is kind of rule 101. If you're going to do a real estate business, or if you're going to set up a business where you're owning some sort of real estate, you never put the real estate inside of a C corp or an S corp, period. And that is a tax disaster. So most people know that, but over the years, I guess, you know, for different reasons and, you know, people not thinking, I sure find a lot of that even today, where you've got appreciated real estate trapped inside of these companies. And the reason it's a tax disaster is because you end up getting it taxed a couple of times if you try to take it out. So it's a really bad thing to do. And so that's one tip, is if your business is going to own real estate, don't set it up as a C corp or an S corp. And even though one of those may make sense for the operations of your business, then do that, but put the real estate in a separate entity and, you know, rent it, have your business rent that real estate from that other entity. That's typically the best way to go. So just wanted to make sure we got that in there, because it's so important.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I encountered a new client coming in. They were referred to me by their CPA, And they had an S corporation loaded with real estate. And in a meeting with the CPA and the client, I said, that's a terrible thing. What idiot did this for you? This is, whoever did this was a moron. And it was the CPA sitting in the room with me that did it. It was, that was one of those awkward moments. So I've learned to say, even when it's really catastrophically a dumb thing to do, to say, well, I'm sure that at the time you did this, there must have been good reasons to do it, but those reasons have probably expired, and we need to explore now some ways. And by the way, if a person is stuck, oh, dang, I got some bad advice or no advice and was out being a cowboy doing my own thing, and I'm stuck now with a bunch of highly appreciated real estate inside of this corporation, there are some things that can be done. We can't make the taxes go away, but we can minimize them a little. We can reduce them some. There are some maneuvers to make. So if you're stuck in that situation, don't despair, but get some counsel on how to get the real estate out without triggering massive taxes. The S corporation is attractive to the service business, as we've talked about. Typically with a single owner, because, and let's talk about a classic one, the dentist. A lot of dentists end up putting their practice in an S corp because just on an income tax planning level, so that income is going to come out of that S corporation in a couple of ways. The dentist, first of all, will take some compensation as an employee, as a W-2 income. And as every business owner knows, when you have W-2 income, in addition to the taxes that the employee sees on their pay stub that were taken out of the employee's portion of that paycheck, there's an employer's portion of taxes as well. And when you're the owner of the business, they call that self-employment tax that the owner of the business has to put up for taxes. And so to the extent that this dentist or anybody, a high-income earner, is going to be taking money out of this S corporation, some of it's going to come out as wages. But having said that, some of the income may also come out as dividends, as S distributions, which are still taxed as ordinary income, but significantly are not subject to the self-employment tax. And Rich, you can maybe elaborate on this some. I know that how do I draw the line? How much do I take as W-2 wages and how much can I take as S distributions? And the rule is it has to be reasonable. So tell us what reasonable is.
Well, reasonable is an interesting concept. Because, and I think you have to take so many things into consideration, even the part of the country that you live in, and you know what other similar professionals are being, you know, would be compensated in, you know, in an environment where they weren't an owner. And so you have to look at all those things. You have to look at, you know, is the business new? Is it, you know, is it a startup? We have a new dentist here, a new CPA, a new attorney. Where are they in that progression? And because obviously new startup companies are going to be paying less than one that's been established for a long time. And so you, there's no real science to this, and obviously that's the place that you have to be careful. But as you and I both know, Rick, the S corps have been around for so long. There's been so much litigation in this area about, you know, what's reasonable, what's not, that there is quite a bit of guidance out there, and you just have to make sure that you take that into consideration when you set the salary, because of course the temptation then what taxpayers always want to do is set the salaries low and the distributions high. And so if you don't go overboard on that, you just have to find the reasonable place and pay a reasonable salary and then distributions. Because just like in a C corp or any other business, you know, yeah, there's some of the income that's generated by your personal efforts, but you've got other people working for you, you've set up a business, you've set up processes, and all of those things contribute to the profitability of the business, and those should be considered to be dividends, not subject to your, just because you're employed there. And so there is definitely good logic for having those distributions, but you just you need to make sure you don't overdo it. And so getting some good advice on that for your particular situation would be important.
You know, sometimes it's counterintuitive because what's reasonable may go the opposite direction of the profitability. For example, you mentioned the new dentist, that dentist it's a one-person shop. They do everything. So essentially all the revenue comes from their services. The line between reasonable might be one place, whereas a seasoned dentist that's only showing up at the office 1.5 days a week and has several chairs of hygienists and other employee dentists that are doing the day-to-day operations, the reasonable line might be in a different place. So all those factors have to come into play. Now, we mentioned at the beginning of the show the general partnership. I'm just going to say that with general partnerships, which also fall into the sole proprietorship, these are general partnerships and sole proprietorships are de facto business structures. They often require no paperwork. They can just happen by the way you do things. And because they are the de facto business structure, they have the worst tax treatment often and the highest exposure to liability. So with a general partnership, for example, each partner in the general partnership has liability for all the partnership obligations. So your other partner can be putting business activity on a personal credit card, and you can be liable for that personal credit card, even though you weren't on a signer on it because of the partnership structure. So with the exceptions that we mentioned, these farm subsidies being one of them, we typically try to steer people away from general partnerships or structure out of them. I will mention in that farm subsidy example, which we've encountered many, many times, we often end up having the partners form a general partnership, but all of the partners are themselves then LLCs or other forms of business entities. Other entities we need to talk about, partnerships, let's talk for just a minute before we take our next break about the tax treatment of partnerships, whether it's a general or a limited or an LLC. Partnerships have different tax rules than both C-Corps and S-Corps. Tell us about that a little bit, Rich.
So if you're a partnership, the way the tax rules work there is that you typically don't encounter any of the issues that we talked about earlier. You can own real estate in a partnership, and there you don't have to worry about any sort of double taxation or getting gains trapped inside. So, obviously it's a pass-through entity, meaning that the entity itself does not have any tax that it pays, but the tax is paid by the owner. So when you hear in the recent election, they're talking about small business and tax rates on small business, we're really just talking about personal rates being so high on small business owners, because that's what most small businesses are structured, either as an S-Corp pass-through or a limited partnership or a partnership of some kind or an LLC, which is taxed as a partnership. So that's why most businesses are taxed at these higher rates, is because they're pass-through entities. So that's kind of a general overview of the taxation of partnerships. And we need to talk more about partnerships, LLCs, and other forms when we get back after this next break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention, live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel or listen on demand to our archived shows.
How do you feel about the future? Tune in each week for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life with host Kate Ebner. You can be a great leader by learning from the inspiring stories of amazing visionaries who are shaping our future. Everyone deserves to create their own vision, and Kate and her guests will share the tools that you need to make it happen. Make a weekly visit to the Voice America Business Channel for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Be inspired. Become inspiring.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Hey, Rick. One thing that I've always been curious about, and I never really understand it, but since we're talking about limited partnerships, I know probably a lot of our listeners out there have seen these variations. Sometimes you see an LP, sometimes you see an LLP, sometimes you see an LLLP. So, not that we need to take a lot of time on it, but what do those mean, and why do we have them?
I love that question. To answer it, we need to understand some of the basic structures of a limited partnership. The traditional limited partnership has two kinds of partners, a general partner and a limited partner. The general partner has control but also has general liability. So a risk event occurring inside of a general partner or a limited partnership will flow out to the general partner. So the general partner can be personal liable. But the limited partners, on the other hand, their liability is limited to whatever they contributed to the partnership. So they put in $100 and the partnership blows up, they lose their $100. That's all they lose. The general partner, he puts in $100 too, the partnership blows up, there's liabilities and lawsuits, that general partner can be personally liable for it. So in the late 80s, early 90s, we had a new kind of entity introduced called the limited liability company. And this was kind of a hybrid. It was an amalgamation, some of the tax attributes of a partnership, but the limited personal liability of a corporation. And for a couple of decades, we had a great experiment going on in the various states trying to figure out how were we going to have these LLCs and were they going to be under the corporate statutes or under the partnership statutes. And so states would give a limited liability partnership, an LLP, or a limited liability limited partnership, which would give the general partner typically some kind of limited liability. So instead of having a general partner with personal liability, there would be a managing partner, but they would have limited personal liability. So you can still in some states buy the extra L. You pay a couple of extra bucks typically for some filings to get the extra L. But for the most part, that practice has not been all that popular. It's not been picked up on because it's simpler and easier to get that limited liability through the limited liability company. And let's kind of introduce those. Partnerships, you know, corporations have shareholders and directors and officers. Partnerships have partners. And you own a partnership interest. Limited liability companies, which have been the winner in this experiment of how are we going to have this go, have an interesting structure. The owners are called members, and then the whoever's in control is called a manager. So the owners are members, the parties in control are managers, and the management of an LLC can be reserved to the members or vested in a manager. If it's reserved to the members manage. If it's vested in a manager, there can be a third-party manager. Now, this is highly significant when we're talking about asset protection, because that ability to vest the management in a third party is very useful in limiting the ability of third parties to come in and file lawsuits and take away the ownership of that LLC. So for a long time, LLCs were taxed per se as a partnership. Without delving into the history too much, there's some dilemmas over in partnership law, partnership theory about how long a partnership can last and so forth. And all of those dilemmas were ended some years ago when the regulators, the IRS, gave us the ability to elect what's called the check-the-box election, elect how an LLC is going to be taxed. So these LLCs now can elect to be taxed as a C-corp or as an S-corp or as a partnership or as a sole proprietorship on a Schedule C. And we check the box. Sometimes it's determined by how they're owned. Now, I want to throw in some pitfalls here. To be taxed as on the Schedule C as a disregarded entity, it's requires it to be a single member managed LLC, which is the most common way we see LLCs set up. A lot of times when CPAs or lawyers that don't know what they're doing set up LLCs, they'll set them up as single member managed LLCs.
Wait, sorry. Are you equating CPAs to lawyers that don't know what they're doing?
Well, when it comes to setting up LLCs, yeah, I'm going to do that because, and here's why. They're set up and the factor that is looked at is simplicity and ease of tax reporting. The disregarded entity is disregarded. So it's easy to report the taxes, and that's the criteria that's used. And if that's our number one goal, the single member managed LLC is a great way to go. But when the client is saying, no, my concern is asset protection, that's what's driving me to set up this entity. That's my motivation here. The single member managed LLC is just crazy. Those entities are routinely walked through by bankruptcy courts, bankruptcy trustees, by plaintiffs. They are easy to get around. I have a client, in fact, right now going through a debtor's examination. And one of the things they ask specifically is, do you have any single member managed LLCs? And they're asking that question because if you do, they're going to get them. So single member managed LLCs don't protect your assets. That's the bottom line. They may contain some liability. So if you put a dangerous piece of property in a single member LLC, it may in some situations help limit the exposure of the members. But the frequency with which courts clobber those entities and reach inside of them to grab their assets makes the single member managed LLC just completely ineffective. So the trick to having an LLC be effective for asset protection purposes without spending any more time on this is to have more than one member, multiple members, and third-party management and generally multiple managers as well that are third parties. Now, with the ability to elect our taxation, we can get the benefits of a C corp, but avoid the need for the annual reports, avoid the need for the annual meetings, and avoid the vulnerability of C corps to having the shares taken by the judgment creditor, because shares are personal property. So we kind of alluded to that in the first segment of our show today. I think another thing we need to mention here, often we see the PLLC or the PC for a corporation. Certain professions like doctors, lawyers, dentists, architects, CPAs, realtors are, as a professional practice, have to put the P in. And sometimes they're required by law to do so, and other times it's optional. And that varies significant from state to state and from profession to profession. Generally, the P, the professional designation, means that the business is controlled by a person who is a licensed professional, and that that licensed professional has personal liability for their professional conduct. They can be personally sued, even though they may be operating under a corporate structure. We see those a lot. Now, one of the things we love about LLCs is that they are profoundly flexible. They can be integrated into a plan, and given whatever attributes make the most sense for what we're trying to accomplish in a plan. So if we're having a company that's going to have the managerial business operations, we'll make that a management company, cause it to be taxed as a C corp or an S corp, and put in the retirement plans and the Section 79 plans, and have employees there. If it's a company that's going to own real estate, we can have that LLC taxed as a partnership and owned under various trusts and things like that. I guess in our few remaining minutes here, another thing I want to hit on is that you can have the right entity. It can be the very best entity out there, but it can be owned or controlled in such a way that completely frustrates your purposes. So it's not enough to have the right entity. The entity has to be owned properly, it has to be controlled properly, and it has to be used properly. We see people will set up their business, and this is true of any type of business, whether it's a corporation or an LLC or any other. If you have this corporate structure and then buy your personal groceries and pay your personal light bill and run your household expenses out of this business structure, you have subverted that business entity, and it's not going to protect you, and it's going to both create tax problems as well as liability exposure problems. On the ownership side, it's important to consider, I just want to say, one of the general rules is you never want your company owned by a natural person. You never want the partners in a partnership to be natural persons. People die. People get sick. They get divorced. They have lawsuits. They become incapacitated. Bad things happen to natural people that cause problems for the business entity, that cause succession issues, that cause tax issues, that cause liability issues. So generally speaking, you want your business entity owned either by a trust of one kind or another, and that's another program, or by another business entity. Generally, if we're trying to go for asset protection, we want more than one party to own it. So we want more than one trust or more than one business entity to own it. And that complexity of ownership is one of the prices we pay, one of the premiums we pay to get asset protection. And then the control options are the same. Generally, if it's a natural person that's in control, we can get in trouble if that natural person is in a lawsuit or a divorce or a bankruptcy or a sickness or dies. So it's generally better to have the control, quote unquote, be another entity that has some succession built in. So if this person's incapacitated or unavailable for some reason, we have a rule and a mechanism and automatically to have somebody else function in that capacity so that we're not stuck or in trouble. And
you know, Rick, the one other thing that probably should be important to anyone starting a business is, we touched on this earlier, but you know, how easy is it to pass through losses? For example, many companies start knowing that they're going to experience losses for the first, you know, year or two. And it's important to say, you know, how can we get the most benefit for those losses? And so the choice of entity has a lot to do with that. So if you set up in a C corp, for example, you're not going to get any benefits for those losses because you're a new company. They're going to sit on your books as net operating losses and will carry forward, and eventually you may be able to use them if you become profitable. But for most people, it's important to get the tax advantages of those losses in the first years because you're already losing money. It would be nice not to have to pay so much tax in those years. And so a pass-through entity like a partnership or an LLC is critical to them surviving many times by being able to reduce the amount of tax that the individuals that are funding this operation are paying. So that's an important aspect of that we probably need a little bit more focus on when you're setting this up. But
so that comes back to knowing what the goals are, where the business is, what's happening with it. It's tough to select the right entity in a vacuum. We have to know those kinds of factors to help a client select what's going to be the best.
Right. Go ahead, Rick.
I think we're down to our calls of action at the end. We need to wrap it up here. I want to say, first of all, to our listeners, if you don't have a business, get one. In spite of all the political uncertainty and sometimes outright hostility towards owning a business is still the best way to create income, to minimize your taxes, to provide for retirement, to grow the economy, to protect your assets. There are so many benefits that come from owning and operating a business within the law that it's just crazy not to have one. So if you don't have one, get one.
And give us a call or text us, call us. Write us an email, but however you want to do it, we would love to talk to you about setting up your businesses, how to do it, and give you some advice on and how to do that so you protect your assets as well as grow your business. And we'll be back here again in a week talking about how to protect and grow wealth.
For listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.